Good morning. Good morning. I welcome you. You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, and this program is Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine, your host. That opening theme you just heard was called Frog Dancing by David Anthony Clark. And on this program, we cover many different kinds of themes, including issues relating to our consciousness, our spirituality, and our health. And most often, all of these issues come together in how we can choose to live our lives and make the transformative changes that we desire and to heal our bodies of pain and discomfort. I'm being joined today by a very special person, I believe, who has had his own journey of transformation and self-healing. And he's with us today to share with you all that he's accomplished, plus how he can help you move through some of the issues in your life. And my guest is Meir Schneider. And Meir was born blind to deaf parents in 1954. Because of congenital cataracts. He went through a process in which, by meeting a young man and learning how to do exercises, changed his life, really. And it's a long story. I'll let him tell it. But now he's in a position where he can actually see in a significant way, as well as he teaches people and helps people with so many different issues within the body. And I really found that it's a beautiful thing, and I want to welcome you, Meir Schneider, to Heart of Mind Radio.
It's so nice to be on your show, Kathy. I haven't spoken to you for a long time.
It has been quite a while. It really has. And I'm happy to be able to introduce you to a whole new crop of listeners here at the Progressive Radio Network. But it would probably be good to start at the beginning, since people may be meeting you for the first time. Tell us something about your early life and how you really got to the point of being able to physically change your body.
I just want to say that what you said is that often the body, the psyche, and the spirit meet together. Mm-hmm. And there's so much to it. For example, when I was at school and I depended on Braille, there were two kinds of schools then in Israel. One was a school where they would just have legally blind people and blind people in that school, so they were all studying as blind people together. And in that time, and we're talking about the early 60s, basically, mm-hmm. the experiment of inclusion began. It's very interesting, if I fast forward, my son, who has some autism, slight retardation, I think had a hard time fitting inclusion, but it really pushed him way forward. Now, in my case, we had a Braille class, and then I had to integrate with kids in regular classes, and kids were pretty abusive, you know. I mean, yeah. They had all kinds of games with a blind kid. They played with me hide and seek in so many different ways, which either would have broken me or did the exact opposite, and that's exactly what happened to me. I became tough, and I really wanted to be one of them, and teachers would complain that I would play in unfinished buildings and fall into ditches and things of that nature, and I refused, in spite of many, many oppressive teacher that I had, to become a submissive boy.
So that very good.
That created my character. And so when I was 16 old, I remember that I went to a bunch of doctors in Israel, the best ones, even without my grandmother, used to take me everywhere. As you said, my parents were deaf, so she used to advocate for me and take me to different doctors. And by the way, she advocated for me all the way. Like, she demanded in the school system that they'll get me to the best high school in the city against the opinion of my teachers. But at that point, I advocated for myself. I went from one physician to another, and they said, you're very motivated, but you will not be able to see. And that's because 99% of my lens is scar tissue. And that's because I did not have the original time, which is 8 weeks of life to 3 years, where the brain develops the whole concept of vision. And it's interesting that I have now many ophthalmologists calling me about difficult problems they have with some of their clients and even their family when infants are being damaged in that particular time for different reasons. Well, in my case, they thought it's over. Your vision is basically 1%. Enjoy the shadows that you see, but stick to Braille. And when I had a high school dropout kid who basically read the book of Aldous Huxley, who's probably known to quite a few people for other reasons, but he wrote the book The Art of Seeing and the book of Pepar, and he exercised them and got rid of his nearsightedness. He had shown me eye exercises, and I started to do them all the time. When I was at school, when I was at home, I was admonished for that. My mother would say, what are you going up to the roof about 10 times every day and do sunning? My teacher said, what are you doing, putting your hands over your eye orbits, sitting throughout the lectures? I had all kinds of complaints, and I came again and again to the principal office until the vice principal simply protected me and say, wait a minute, he's doing something that doesn't disturb his studies, and it's really good for him. And lo and behold, within 6 months, my vision became 5%, and today it's 70%, and I was able to withstand all the opposition that came my way in the beginning of my work, and it came because of lack of understanding to the value of what I was doing. And by the way, it probably got me to be strong enough that I can deal with some of the heckling today of the medical profession, because what I'm saying is what nobody is willing to hear. We can prevent 90% of our vision problems. We can prevent many, many of the physical problems that we have, and we have to start and believe in the power of nature.
Wow. Well, that was certainly a very powerful statement. I thank you for that. And you were able to improve your vision, and at this point you actually do have a driver's license, correct?
Yeah, to the devastation of practically everyone. As a house guest right now, I said to her, I'm going to pick you up from the airport. She said, what did I do wrong? Yeah. I remember this joke. Once my parents visited my sister and myself from Israel, and I said to my mother, I want to drive you to the mountains. And she remembered me not being able to cross the street. I had a bunch of accidents just trying to cross the street. She said, no, don't drive me too far, please. And my sister was laughing and said to her, you know, here in America we have everything. Mm-hmm. We have phones for deaf people. In that time, you know, they didn't have the computerized things like today, but a special code phone for deaf people. And we also have cars for blind people. but anyway, I am driving. You won't see me driving from San Francisco to New York, but you'll see me driving especially around town. You'd see me driving to Marin County on the freeway for 15 minutes. You see me at long trips, for me, is from San Francisco to Sacramento, or sometimes I go as far as Grass Valley, Nevada City. Once I even went as far as Fresno, but those are very long drives for me. I didn't even drive all the way to L.A., but I drove to Esalen Institute, which is in Big Sur, through Highway 1. I hate to change highways in the middle, which I have to do on my way to the airport, but I hate to do that. I like to sit in that lane and just go on and drive normal with the car being in front of me and behind me. I feel that my biggest achievement was that I can be behind the wheels and drive. And the DMV got tired of me because any time they wanted to restrict me, I came again and again, and I was proving that I can drive in the daytime, at night, on the freeways. I mean, normally you get a test for 20 minutes. I kept getting those one-hour tests until they gave up on me and gave me an unrestricted driver's license.
Very good. And I just want to let people know that you do have quite a number of different kinds of materials. You have CDs, you have DVDs, you have Vision Kit, and you have a couple of books. And one of them, I believe, was one of your early books, is called Vision for Life. And I wonder if you could talk about the work that's in that book that people might be able to gain access to and learn from it.
The most important thing about Vision for Life, it's almost a manifesto that tells you how your vision can get better, because we keep getting the information, and I think it's misinformation from the medical profession, that the only thing that can happen to your vision is either it stays the same or gets worse. And what I'm suggesting there is to take steps that could get you to see better. This is a revelation in the world, and it's a revelation to all the participants in my workshops. And the fact that it can get better is something that I intend to fight for the rest of my life, because the odds are against me. Finally, by the way, there was a research done in Brazil on my work by two physical therapists who are trainers of my work that have proven that 31 children have improved their vision within 2 months of doing simple exercises in my method, and the average was that each one of them saw a line better on the chart. And that breaks all concepts that one cannot see better. So the ideas behind Vision for Life is, first of all, to compensate for modern life. In the past, people used to look at a distance. People used to be hunters, and they used to be farmers. They didn't have a weather report. They basically looked at the clouds. They looked far at the distance. They did not have news. They looked to see if their enemies, if their friends coming their ways from great distance. These days, we become basically bookworms. We look from near. We look at computers. So our eyes are really changing the way that they function. And what happens is that the structure of the eye changes because of the fact that we look so much from near. So it leads to tremendous stress within the eye. The lens becomes, for too long, basically convex instead of flat when you look at a distance, and the eyeball slowly and surely becomes longer and longer. So I'm giving people a very easy way to get out of it. First of all, to rest the eye, and we have a nice exercise that Dr. Bates did it last century and Tibetan yogis did for 1,500 years, which is to rub the hands and put the hands around the eye orbits. We have the idea of looking far at a distance, and by the way, that's a good prevention from cataracts. There was one lady that I've given her that exercise to look at a distance 40 minutes a day, every day, and after a year to decrease it to 20 minutes a day, and she had the beginning of cataracts. And 9 years later, I visited her in Portland, and her doctor, she went to the doctor to find out what happened. He said, I don't know what you're doing. Keep doing it, because your cataract is exactly the same 9 years later. So basically, if you look at a distance, you flatten your lens, and you give the lens a break from looking so much from near. And we have exercises in nature. We have exercise in the sun. We're being told to stay away from the sun, like the sun is going to hurt us badly. Well, there's a way that it can, and there's a way that it can also help us. And the exercise of closing the eyes and moving the head from side to side, that leads to contraction of the pupils while we face the sun and expansion when we move away, that exercise really strengthens the eyes. In my case, I used to have dark glasses because my eyes had nystagmus. Have you seen Stevie Wonder?
Yeah.
So you saw how his eyes are moving with no stop, right? Mm-hmm. They're fluttering. My eyes used to move 300 times per minute.
Oh, my goodness.
And now they move 12. And people thought I'm on drugs when I took my glasses off, but I wasn't. What happens is my optic nerve was very irritable because of the lack of brain development. The brain wants you to see, the eye does not provide, and it's almost like a spasm of the nerve, although you can't define it as such. Nerves don't have spasm, but it's great irritation. And so I slowed down my nystagmus. I started to adjust to light, and it's in the light that I was hiding from that I was starting to be able to see. And I will never forget, once in New York, there was a lady who was brought to me by her son, and she wasn't able to see anything except halos because she had a retinal disease, which is called retinitis pigmentosa. Well, we went downstairs from the Meta Center where I was, and we put eye charts on window, you know, the blinds that they close the windows with in businesses before the business owner came. And she was able, after doing sunning, to discern big letters, and it's the first time in years that she was able to see them. And there aren't enough people who educate people to use the resources they have. Now, my book, Vision for Life, in 200 short pages, and many books are so thick, and in simple language, I'm giving people an introduction of how they can start and work on their eyes by expanding their peripheral vision, by looking at details, by looking at the distance, by resting the eyes and adjusting to light, how they can slowly but surely improve their vision. And the data is completely with me. In one of my six-day eye classes, I had an amazing situation where out of 23 people, 22 people improved their vision. That's unusual. I also had sometimes bad statistics where out of 150 people, only 70 improved their vision. But that was, for me, it showed me how much people can improve. Like when Abraham Maslow said that anytime anybody breaks a record, he breaks it for all of us. And 22 out of 23 people improving is a record for me. And what I've done with my eyes is a good record for anyone else to know what they can do with their own.
Yes, it's a very, very powerful work. And we're going to be talking in a little while about your workshops that you give and your private sessions. But I wanted to move first to the other work that you do, because you are a licensed massage therapist as well. And you have another book, Method of Self-Healing Through Body Work and Movement. And I wanted you to bridge to the broader perspective of what you're doing and tell us how people can help themselves with different conditions. And, you know, some of these could be very complicated or serious issues in the body and nervous system that isn't necessarily treatable so well through the mainstream healing processes.
Absolutely, Kathy. And before I answer your question, I'm so enthused about somebody I'm working with right now that I want to share it with you. Anyone who read my book, Movement for Self-Healing, which is based on my book, Self-Healing, My Life and Vision, and I think that many people read that book originally in the 80s and 90s when it was released, and knows about a character there whose name is Vered, V-E-R-E-D. It's like Rose in English. And we met in our 20s. She was very enthused about the work I've done on my eyes. We met in the same university. And not only she came to me, she brought many of her friends. She was suffering from polio. These days we have less of it. But in that time, many ladies, beautiful ladies in their 20s, were limping or were in the wheelchair. And she was very close to the wheelchair. The doctors have removed the contents of her left toe, no, sorry, right toe, big toe, and they put cement instead of that, and they intended eventually to sever the toe, but they thought for a few years it will help her it was one of the worst things they could do for her. She had a bunch of surgeries and tremendous sensitivity. Well, I was able to get her to reduce her limp quite a bit, and I was able to keep her on her feet for 40 years, 4-0. And then she went to the wheelchair, and she still is walking with crutches but sits in the wheelchair. She just now came to visit me in San Francisco. She's my house guest. And we had for a few days daily treatments. Now, whenever she would lie on her stomach, she couldn't bend her right knee up, and she could hardly bend her left one. So what I did is I worked on her feet and got a real good connection between her brain and her feet, and also did something that I normally would not do in the past, but in her case I decided to do it, deep tissue on her thighs. And she bent her knees one by one, the right with difficulties, but the left without any difficulty. And then she was able to walk with her crutches much better. So while in her 20s I was able to get her out of the wheelchair, in the 60s I can get her to be with crutches. And the big thing is that if you were there, Kathy, you would have seen the right knee only bending an inch and eventually bending all the way, the full range, down to the point that the heel would touch the buttocks. Mm-hmm. And you do that with connection, because what happens is with time, as you get weaker, your brain stops connecting to different parts of your body. Now, she's a therapist in my method, and this is very therapeutic for her. But she told me about a case of somebody who came to her with Parkinson's and decided not to take all the drugs. Drugs are working well, but they have a lot of side effects. And he, unfortunately, was at risk of dying because he had stiff arms and legs. That wasn't as big deal as the fact that he could never close his mouth. His mouth was dry. His tongue was sticking out of the mouth. And there's a lot of saliva. She tried all kinds of things, moved his legs, moved his arms, massaged him, tried to work on the mouth. Nothing worked. And then she saw that he's not blinking. She was teaching him to blink, and he was able to close his mouth. And from that moment, he didn't feel that he's suffocated when he is asleep. Now, this is something that's so hard to explain, but I can understand it. In that when you relax the eyes, you affect the facial nerves. And when you affect the facial nerves, it's easier to move the mouth. Now, that's something I just heard the other day, so I became so enthused about it. And so what I want to say is this, that most paralysis could be modified. I was able, for example, just lately to prevent a multiple sclerosis patient from going to special assistance home at the urge of her daughter, because she would fall and couldn't get up. And she has a combination of multiple sclerosis and osteoporosis, so she's bent, all kinds of problems. But I'm able to get her to move better and gain confidence. And for her, it's such a big deal that she can stay at her home, beautiful home in Marin County. And the principles of the work, it doesn't matter if you have a huge problem or small problem. Of course, the exercise has to be different. Is to balance the body, is to use muscles we never used before and connect between the brain and those muscles. Because we have 600 muscles, and even normal people use between 50 and 100 of them. We just don't have enough connection to most of the movements that exist for us. So to balance the body, to use muscles we never used before, loosen up the muscles we always use, and integrate between the ones we always use and the ones we didn't. That resets the whole nervous system. It creates better connection between the brain and the body. And literally, it can get paralyzed people out of the wheelchair. Not everyone. We talk case by case, but I was very enthused about the results that I have, including the ones I told you about right now.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I find really interesting is that, yes, we can really help people who are at a level of advancement in their disease state or in their body's condition. But this work is also very beneficial for people who just maybe have been too sedentary and are beginning to have twinges and realize or having symptoms of a more serious condition. Can you connect this
work? Absolutely. Let me tell you, you're talking about 6 billion people basically right now. One thing that happens is we have no understanding. Finally, some people understand it. That sitting on the chair is a big problem for a modern person. Also, by the way, walking with shoes and on cement is a big problem for all of us. One of the reasons that I don't have back pain, and Kathy, I well deserve back pain. I mean, just this year alone, I was traveling to the Orient to teach. I was traveling to Jerusalem to teach. I was traveling to Germany, to the Black Forest, to England. I'm traveling all over the place. New York is a short trip for me. It's next door. But what happens is I should really get back pain because, you know, I normally go economy unless somebody flies me business. I don't pay business. I pay economy. And, you know, economy is made for people who don't have hips or knees, right? I mean, we get very crowded. And I don't have back pain. And one of the reasons is that I run on the beach between 3 and 4 times a week, bare feet. And it varies between 1 mile to 7 miles, depends how much time I have that day. I love to run. I'm not a quick runner as I used to be, but I enjoy the running, and this the sinking in the sand feels so good to me. And that really supports the rest of my body. Now, I think that what most people don't understand is how restricted the body is. And I have two easy pieces of advice for everyone. Stand up every 20 minutes and look up at the ceiling. Stretch your back backwards. And if you can grab your ankle, not everyone can do it, but if you can grab your ankle and pull it backwards, that's the opposite of sitting. And all you need to do is breathe 3 or 4 times. You lift one leg, and then you lift the other leg, and you basically arch yourself backwards slowly with consciousness. You don't want to just pull a muscle. But if you do it, then you sit back, and your back is good for the next 20 minutes to half an hour. You do it 5 or 6 times during the day. Every 2 hours, you make a point of going away from your chair. Even, you know, I know the employment laws in California demand that every 2.5 hours, people should get out of the chairs. And I know that I'm asking the office staff in my school, and sometimes they don't listen to me, but I wish they did. Leave your post. Go to the trampoline. Walk by the beach for a few minutes. They get glued to the phone and Lord knows what. But I really want them to stand, walk, and stretch. And that's what we need to do. And about the feet.
Before we get to the feet, we're going to take a station identification. And then when we come back, we'll finish this thought and talk more about your visit to New York City. Stay tuned. And welcome back. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio over PRN.FM, and we are open to receiving your phone calls as we proceed through the remainder of the program. If you have a question for Mayor Schneider, please give us a call at 888-874-4888. That number again is 888-874-4888. And welcome back, Mayor Schneider. And we've been speaking about your really revolutionary work with vision as well as with self-healing through body work and movement. And you were about to tell us about how to work with our feet.
Exactly. You have to, again, I want to bring back the fact that our feet are very confined and we don't have much use of our toes. Pay attention that armless people or people who are unfortunate and are born with short arms, many of them learn to use their toes better than the rest of us. In fact, their hips often become loose. They can feed themselves with their toes. I heard of one woman who was able to even put a diaper on her infant with her toes. We knew about Jimi Hendrix, who did have use of his arms but could even play guitar with his toes. And yet we have no control over our toes. Our toes are being confined in shoes. And so two things I suggest. First of all, whenever you have a soft carpet, take your shoes off, take your socks off, just allow yourself to walk bare feet. Whenever you are near a sandy beach, walk bare feet. I'm afraid of telling people to walk bare feet in Central Park because there could be glass there. Mm-hmm. But if you can have thin shoes or thick socks and feel the grass, that would be a great thing. And the other thing is to move your feet in rotating motion so you'd have the full range of motion with your feet, and then imagine that you move your feet in rotating motion. And then to hold your toes, to hold four toes and move one toe in rotating motion, then hold the other four toes. So you use the big toe, the second, the third. Most people feel paralyzed, like the toes cannot move. But I always give people the exercise. I tell them, sit on a chair and try to get your feet to move forwards one after the other with the power of your toes. And practically everyone can do that. Mm-hmm. But when I tell them to stand and try to walk forwards just with the power of the toes, almost no one can do that. So basically, our toes became weak out of lack of use. The muscles are there, but against gravity, we can't do it. So just like paralyzed people, like people with muscular dystrophy and polio, I take them to pools to exercise, warm pools for people who have arthritis, polio, muscular dystrophy, cold pools, people who have multiple sclerosis. They should not go to warm pools. But what happens is they move muscles that could not move outside the water, and we can move them. We have weak toes. We can't move them against gravity, so we have to start and use them, and the reward is huge. If you start to use your toes, even unsuccessfully, and if you start to move your ankles, you will support your back, and you will support your neck, and you'll have many benefits from it, and then the work directly on the back and on the neck will be very beneficial.
Hmm. That's really very, very good information. Let me ask you something out of curiosity. Why is it that if a person has MS, they should be in a cold water and other conditions warm water?
Because what happens in multiple sclerosis is that you really have a scar in the central nervous system. You have a disappearance of the material that allows the nerve impulse to move fast. And that material is called the myelin sheath. And basically, it's like insulator. So the impulse jumps from one gap to another of the myelin sheath. And when that disappears, the impulse becomes sluggish, or it gets to the body too late. So when you are in cold water, you basically shrink that scar. And if it's hot, you basically expand it. Now again, mm-hmm. Kathy, nothing is black and white. Things are in shades of gray, which means basically you have some cases where cold is bad for them, but 95% of the people with multiple sclerosis, if they are in a hot summer, that's normally when they'll get most of their attacks. And if some of them wear astronaut suits to not have those attacks, but mainly the thing is to be in cold water is so helpful to them. I had somebody actually who lives in New York. Her name is Magda, and she came to me from Mexico, from Tapoztlan, Mexico, near Cuernavaca, because one of my practitioners did not know what to do with her. She was already in the wheelchair. She couldn't really move much. Well, I massaged her, got her to walk a little bit. Then I took her to the ocean. And, you know, San Francisco Ocean is not the warmest one in the world. I mean, mm-hmm. most people don't bathe in it, just and not like me. Yesterday I did, you know. But basically, I took her to the ocean. And after the ocean, she walked as if she never had a problem. Mm. Of course, that didn't fix her multiple sclerosis, but it temporarily reduce the distance of the scar, you know, of the myelin sheath areas, and then she exercised in cold pools, and at least for 10 years, it kept her in a good shape.
Well, that's good. That's very good information. I want to let people know that you are actually coming here to New York. So when will you be arriving? I know that you're doing a workshop somewhere in the vicinity.
Yeah,
and you're
in
also
Lake Placid.
Doing, where's that?
Near Lake Placid.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's far away from you. Yeah,
that's pretty far from New York City. However, this is the internet, so there may very well be people who are listening who are closer to Lake Placid. So just give the date and information, just in case.
So I'm going to see private clients in Manhattan. I'm still working on the location, but I'll firm it today. I'll see private clients in Manhattan on Monday night, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the 15th through the 18th, and on the 20th and 21st, and 21st is my 60th birthday, by the way.
Oh, wow, happy birthday.
Thank you. I will be teaching a workshop in the area of Lake Placid, New York, and it's going to be a two-day workshop on natural vision improvement and self-healing through movement. Mm-hmm. And I already taught in Lake Placid. Many of the people who came to my workshop there, it was sponsored by the American Massage Therapy Association of New York, are coming back to my workshop because they enjoyed it very much. And basically, it's a transformational workshop. You learn about the capacity that you have, and not simply intellectually and physically and and mentally. And I think it would make a big difference. You know, I'm almost 60, and cold weather doesn't bother me, and hot weather doesn't bother me. I can be in many different climates, and that has to do with the circulation that I have. It's very good circulation, and I want other people to be exactly in the shape that I'm in with incredible capacity. I'm not the best example of my method anyway, but I would say that there's a lot that you can do when you engage with parts of your body that you have not used before.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And when you are going to be in New York City and receiving people privately, how do they get in contact with you to set up an appointment?
Please call the School for Self-Healing at 415-665-9574.
Okay, say that again.
415-665-9574.
Okay.
And they can set appointment with the office.
And so we don't have any calls coming in at the moment. It's 888-874-4888. But I would like to know really what is the – well, I know because I've actually shared the experience of working with you. But let people know what happens when they come to see you or attend a workshop. What would that experience be like?
Well, about workshop, by the way, I'm going to start to teach a workshop tomorrow here in San Francisco, the Labor Day workshop. And here we also serve food and Mediterranean, Indian, and Thai cuisines, the best ones we're ordering for our people. My workshops, in a very relaxed way, slowly, slowly, we help people to work with things that they're very vulnerable with, like their vision. We try to get them to be comfortable. There was one woman who said, I will never take my contacts off. And I said to her, well, you can try it. And towards the end of the day, she was so comfortable not having them. And it was first in 30 years, basically,
wow,
that she did that. So what happens in my workshop is, in a very friendly environment, we start to work on issues that were hard on us in our body, in our vision, for many, many years. And individual sessions, I receive people. What we do is body work, massage. So, for example, yesterday I worked with somebody who has a major cataract in one eye and another cataract in the other eye. And surgeons want to remove the cataract in both eyes. Like, basically, cataract surgery is that you remove the lens. Well, I really agree they should remove the cataract in her right eye, but the left eye has good vision, has 20, 80, 50% of normal vision indoors. So the first thing I've done is, after testing her, I did with her a lot of massage. We did a lot of relaxation. And then we started to use the eye, and we end up temporarily, at least seeing yesterday, 20/30, which is much, much better than 20/80, towards the end of the session. So what I'm doing is I slowly, slowly follow with the exercises. I like to see people for 2.5 hours rather than an hour and 15 minutes, which is my minimal session, to just be with the person for enough time and experiment with enough things until I'm able to find what works for them. And I want to tell you about two cases that actually can give you a sense of what we do. One is a case that I did not manage, but one of my best trainers in Brazil did. There was a kid who was born with coloboma. This is a rare eye disease where you basically have holes with inside your eye, in the middle of the eye, in the retina, everywhere. So he was born in Japan, and the parents heard from the Japanese ophthalmologist that he'll be blind for life. And he was a Brazilian Japanese. His family came to Brazil, and they met Sonia, who lives in Rio Claro. It's 4 hours from Sao Paulo. And she has a very special clinic with dark room with all kinds of lights. And in Brazil, the ophthalmologist was more optimistic. He said, the left eye will be able to see, probably be legally blind. The right eye will be blind completely. The holes are too big. So as soon as they came to Sonia, instead of just simply taking the word of the doctor, I mean, with all the respect needed, but she was trying for herself. So she patched his left eye and got him to look at lights in the dark and do all kinds of stimulation with him. And he was able to discern those lights. He was able to see them. So then they went outdoors, and within a month he could see figures and shapes. And within 3 months, the right eye had tremendous vision. While it looked anatomically next to impossible, reminds me of my own eye, that anatomically it looks like it cannot see. But his was even worse. He was able to build that vision. So the mother came for a routine test 6 months later to the doctor, and the doctor looked at the left eye and said, yeah, it looks good. The holes are not getting any bigger. Looks like he's going to see something. And the mother says he also sees with his right eye. He said, that's not possible. So she put a patch. The mother put a patch over his left eye, threw a ball, and the kid immediately ran and took the ball. And now, even though we're trying to help people get rid of glasses, in his case, with glasses, his vision is 80% of normal vision, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. So that's one case where we experiment on the field. Unlike double-blind study, we study with each client, with body work, with movement, with experiment of what they can do. Like, I had a lady who came to my workshop in the College of Psychic Study in London. And she has retinitis pigmentosa, and she considers herself to be completely blind. And throughout the workshop, she saw something here, and she saw something there. And then we had a session with her, a double session. I wish we had more. And we were walking in the streets in London, and then I started to ask her, do you see there is a car? She wouldn't see the car as properly as you and I would see, but she could see the borders of the car, where it starts and where it ends. And then I told her, can you see the spaces between cars? And she started to see the spaces, and lo and behold, she started to recognize buildings and cars and big objects. And she said, how come nobody ever taught me to do that? How come nobody ever taught me to use what I have? And the third one I want to tell you quickly is somebody by the name of Esperanza, who came to Mexico, to the same lady by the name of Patricia. I was teaching a class, and I had 11 students there, and three of them were women who were blind in one eye. And Esperanza, I took them aside. I gave my two assistants to work with them as I was continuing with my eye class to get people to read better and see the chart better. And I got them to patch their seeing eyes and have blinking lights in the dark with the blind eyes. Well, two of them took it like an exercise. But Esperanza, who, by the way, came all the way to Colombia from Cuernavaca, all the way from Colombia to Cuernavaca, freaked out. She left the room. She did not know what to do. She screamed. And then she returned to the workshop, and she worked on her left-seeing eye for presbyopia, you know, for reading and all that. And 2 days later, she came to me for private session, asked, Esperanza, what happened to you when they took you with the other two ladies? She said, she hugged me, and she said, Mayor, when my seeing eye was patched, I remember that I lost my father when I was 17, and was a sense of a loss to see nothing. And then we massaged her and relaxed her, and she was not able to see with a patched eye even the big letter on the chart from 1 foot. So we took her indoors. We started with the blinking lights. We saw that only part of her eye can see the blinking lights, part cannot. So we covered the part that can see and stimulated the part that cannot. And next day, she was able to read 3 lines on the big chart from 1 foot and then from 2 feet. And when we finished the series of sessions, 3 sessions, beside the fact that her husband said to me that his house is mine because he was so enthused about it, and any time I go to Bogota to not forget to come to him. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that that happened is she told me, Mayor, it's my birthday gift, because she had a birthday then. I have peripheral vision in my left eye that I did not know existed for me. And she had 8 retinal tears, and they were so bad that no one could imagine that her retina could get anything. And the result of what we did, she did have poor vision, but substantial, and she was able to use that eye. And she felt, now I'm a safe driver. So here's huge psychological changes, acceptance of poor vision, and integration of the two eyes, the one that see well, the one that is legally blind, but getting both of them to work together.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful story. And we're just about out of time. You brought up one question. If you could maybe give this a little bit quickly. There seems to have been an emotional connection there, you know, when she said that she went outside and the loss reminded her of the loss of her father. Do you find that people's emotional issues are bound into their physical problems?
Constantly. Absolutely constantly. I mean, let me talk to you about polio. When I worked with Vered, and that was in my 20s when I started to form the therapy, and I work with a bunch of polio people, and one of them was very pretty, had one what she called interesting leg. One good leg and one interesting leg, and then she called it idiotic leg. It had 9 surgeries, and it was very thin. And I saw that she has such incredible hatred to her leg. So at the end of the session, I asked her to massage my leg. She said, your legs don't need massage. Well, they get tired sometimes. So she massaged my legs. And after 20 minutes when she finished, I said, you see, you massaged my legs with incredible amount of care. But you touch your own leg with incredible amount of hostility. Now touch your leg gently, feel its needs, and take care of it. And from there on, she massaged the legs. And the therapy included much more than that. She had the locked foot that wouldn't move. It was a drop foot, and the doctors decided to put a bone there, to take her ilium bone and put it in her ankle, and so it was locked, but with imagery, in spite of it being locked, we were able to get it to move. But the therapy was long, but she was able to get rid of her cane in spite of polio and in spite of 9 surgeries after being able to touch her own leg without being hostile to it. So I think that an ability to embrace our life and to emotionally accept our life as it is makes a huge difference for us and makes it possible for us to be in touch with ourselves and to do the right exercises.
Beautiful. And as we are really out of time at this point, why don't you give out your contact information again, your phone number or website, if so people can find out more about
sure.
your work.
Sure. Our phone number is 415-665-9574, and in 2 hours the office staff will be there, and even during Labor Day. And our and our web is www.self-healing.org. Remember the hyphen. So self-healing.org.
Okay. And let me ask you, what are the dates again that you're going to be in New York City?
I'm going to be the 15th through the 19th. So I'm going to work on the 15th at night, 16, 17, and 18 with people, and 19 I'm flying to Lake Placid area.
Okay, I want to thank you very much, Meir Schneider, for joining us here on Heart of Mind Radio. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Kathy, so, so much.
All right, take good care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And for I just wanted to thank all of you who are tuned in today for joining me on Heart of Mind Radio. And I wanted to give you a bit of a reminder that we have an ongoing spiritual support group. Actually, it's only two more meetings this year, September and October. And we'll be meeting on Friday, September 5th. And we start at 6:30 p.m. At 7, we do a meditation to really open and relax our body and our spirit and connect all that together, body, mind, and spirit. Again, that's Friday, September 5th. It starts at 6:30, meditation at 7. And if you can, bring a snack so that we can, you know, with enough to share. We have a, you know, we like to snack as we talk and work through our various thoughts and issues with regard to spirituality. It's at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, and you can find out more or reserve by sending an email to myself, Catherine@heartofmind.org, K-A-T-H-R-Y-N, Catherine@heartofmind.org, if you want to find out more about the support group or anything else. Stay tuned. Coming up for more great programming over PRN.FM. Thank you.